Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, everybody, really excited on today's Sweaters Forever podcast to talk to two-time Stanley Cup champion from the NHL Network, Dave Reed. We'll get to him in a second. It's proudly presented by Choctaw Casino and Resort in Durant. Your favorite slots, table games, and dining are back, guys. Everything's back at Choctaw. You can visit their world-class casino. Head up there this weekend. Your winning experience awaits. Delicious dining rooms. I've been there myself. It's absolutely an amazing experience. Thanks to Choctaw Casino and Resort for sponsoring today's Sweaters Forever podcast. Dave Reed is joining us today, analyst for the NHL Network. Personally, I think one of the better analysts in hockey. You'll remember him hoisting the cup in 1999 for your Dallas Stars. You can watch NHL Tonight at 5 o'clock, plus NHL Network will feature exhibition games beginning Tuesday at 7. Visit NHLnetwork.com for your channel listings. Thanks so much for joining us today, Dave.
Thanks, Kevin. My pleasure. It's good to talk hockey once again.
Yeah, absolutely. How is your, we just talked about this off the air, how is your quarantine and your schedule with NHL Network going to work?
It looks as though, for me, I'll be coming down probably doing the regular shifts that most of the analysts come in. They usually have us in for 3 to 5 days at a time. And for the guys who aren't local, who live in the New Jersey, New York area, I'm a little different. There's, I think, Mike Johnson and myself are the only two Canadians who live in Canada who travel in and out regularly. We've got other guys, Canadians who are, you know, living in the States full time. So crossing the border, I haven't done yet. You know, my work visa says I can do it and allow it. That'll be the only interesting issue is because the borders are obviously closed to non-essential work. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm anticipating everything to go well and that we will get back to some sort of regular schedule. And once the games get up and running, and I'm hoping by the end of this weekend to have my schedule for the next month or so, kind of like everybody else. But I think everything is still...
Yeah,
I know everything right now is still very fluid and moving along as to who's getting games, how many games are going to be aired where, and so forth. So it's different times, but I'm looking forward to it.
So you're playoff ready?
Oh yeah, let's go. It's difficult, refreshing because everybody's healthy now. So I'd be refreshing. Yeah. Oh man, these guys, you know, this goalie's out here, all these guys are. It's like, nope, not anymore. Everybody's back. So it's going to be interesting. I still haven't done that one bit of research as to which teams have started the seasons on a high in the last few years. And mm-hmm. I think that might come into play. If teams are good starters at the start of the regular season, that might be something that could help a few teams out and might be looking as underdogs. And other teams have kind of notoriously slow starters. That may not be the way you want to be right now, because it's once they start that best of five series, Dallas isn't in that, but once the other teams all start the best of five series, you can't have a slowdown or a lag. You've got to start pretty much in high gear.
Yeah, one of the other fascinating aspects, I was talking about this last week, is Jason Dickinson of the Stars said, I tried my hardest outside of Toronto to work out, but it's not the same, and I lost a lot of my playing weight, and it's going to be tough getting that back. I think that's going to be an adjustment for players as well. They were gearing up for those playoffs, and then they have this time off, and no matter how you try, you can only do so much to keep in that or getting ready for that playoff type shape. Patrick Laine was talking about that as well. I can't believe in, you know, a week or so I'm going to be playing playoff hockey.
Yeah, Gavin, it's very interesting because a lot of players, if they don't have a full gym facility in an area that they can do privately, everything's been shut down other than maybe the last few weeks. It's starting to open up again, at least up here. And I think it's kind of the same throughout North America and in most of the world. So, I can understand where Dickinson's coming from on that, because you know you build up even through the season to playoffs, but even in the summer, which these guys pretty much have their summer vacation, you build up your workouts to hit training camp so that you're peaking at the right time. And a lot of those times are you're skating with guys, which most people haven't been able to do because the facilities aren't open until they got back into into Dallas, to where the facilities open with the NHL. And also, your training facilities, and it all depends where guys are living. Every province and state has different rules. that are applying. So it could be very difficult. Guys get routines, and once you get out of that routine, you might be in good shape, but mentally you're not comfortable because it's not your routine. And I think that's going to come into play. But you can also see that everybody is in the same boat. And so that should help everybody's psyche thinking, okay, well, everybody's doing the same as I am. We should be on an even playing field. But we'll wait and see in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. So anytime I have a former cup-winning Dallas Star on, I get a lot of questions from listeners and fans of that team, because without that team, I don't know if hockey would have that popularity here in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. So, you know, one of the things getting prepared for this interview, you had a real good run in that 99 playoffs. You had 10 points, and you were on that pivotal line with Neuendijk and Langenbrunner. So running backs and quarterbacks take care of the rest of their offensive line when they have good years. What did the former Stars GM and playoff MVP get for Dave Reed since he won that trophy?
He got me a Stanley Cup ring.
All right.
I think that's the way everybody looks at it. And, you know, Nui had a great run. Benoit Hogue hurt his knee, had an ACL injury, after, I think it was like in second round, and Hitch moved me up to that line in the left wing position with Nui and Jamie on the second line. And, you know, I stepped into a great situation. We clicked really well. And against Colorado, we had a real good series. And then, of course, you had Mo with Holly and Yuri Lehtinen on the top line. So we were kind of 1A and 1B. And all I needed was the Stanley Cup ring. I think everybody was the same. But we had so many guys. I knew we won the Conn Smythe, but Eddie was unbelievable in that. Our defense was absolutely phenomenal. Zuby and Sid back there, and, you know, leading the way offensively. And, you know, we were such a deep team and skilled team. You know, everybody stepped up for each other. So it was one of those things that we don't see it the same as you see in football. We all look at it, it's like, hey, we all got the Stanley Cup ring and we all did it together. So it's a good one, though. I should maybe send Nui a note. Say,
yeah.
Hey, do you remember this? But I got my Stanley Cup ring, and that was all I needed. That was a lot of fun. It's one of those situations where I was put in by with Hitch, and we clicked right away. And my roles were more on that penalty killing and the third line, fourth line, depth guys. But when you step into a second-line role and an offensive role, I was fortunate that we gelled very quickly, and we were able to put some points up and help us get us through the conference final against Colorado.
Yeah, had you had practice on that line prior?
I played with Nui and Jamie before at different times throughout that was my third year with both of those guys on the team. We're a veteran team, so I played with multiple guys on different times. You never know with Hitch at times. He changed lines up regularly, so if one guy was having a good game, another guy wasn't, or he wanted to send messages or just, you know, change things up. It was comfortable, I think, for most guys to move up. I think it was tougher to play with Mo because of his speed. And that line that he had with Yuri was the Energizer Bunny. He could keep up with Mo, and Hulley was smart enough to understand, you know, he maybe didn't skate as fast, but he didn't have to. He just needed to be in the right position for Mike to make the play. So he was probably the toughest guy to play with because of his speed, whereas, you know, Nui and Jamie were more my style of play, so it was actually easier. Our team style of play was, you know, get it deep, outwork the other teams low, you know, win the one-on-one battles, and that's where, you know, Joe was fantastic in the face-off circles down in front of the net, and Jamie Langenbrunner was, you know, he was a do-it-all type of player. He was great in the defensive zone, high energy, great speed, young kid, so we just seemed to mix, but it didn't really matter who you played with on that team. You found a way to gel. I mean, even Mike got hurt in that playoff, and Tony Hurka stepped in on the top line for Mo, and we didn't miss a beat.
Yeah, I honestly, Dave, I don't know how you guys did it back then. Fox Sports Southwest just reran a lot of the games during this pandemic, and even the scrums that didn't turn into fights. I mean, compared to today's game, I mean, do you ever like look back or see old games and say, "Wow, what a difference"?
Oh yeah, I didn't get the opportunity to watch those. I don't get Fox Sports Southwest up where I live, but you know, when you do see the older games, it's like, holy cow, like,
yeah,
the game's changed. You know, the game is it's speed and skill now, and you know, when we played, you still had an intimidation factor, but in the playoffs, you had to really check your emotions, and you couldn't cross the line. You know, you pushed the line, and I know that we were allowed to do more with the hooking and the holding and the face washes and you know, kind of the later hits and stuff that they don't allow in today's game. Once they kind of sped up the game and changed the rules, so it's more free flowing, which would be amazing to see guys like Mike Modano playing today's game, where you couldn't grab onto a sweater and hang onto him halfway up the ice. But it's the game's progressed, and you go back and look at games in the 70s and the 60s and 50s, and the progression that everybody says, and you know, through the decades, it's interesting. But it was a different style, and we played a little bit every style with that team. We had a big, physical, tough team. If you wanted to play that way, we had a skilled team, we had a fast team. Defensively, we could check with you. Offensively, we could score with you. And that's why we were successful. It was a very well put together team. Bob Gainey, Doug Armstrong did a great job of putting the right people in the right place, and filling the holes that we needed. And then Hitch was the mastermind technician behind the bench who drove everybody crazy, but got us all pulling the rope in the same direction.
Yeah, it's hard to believe it's been 20-plus years now. So statute of limitations are in effect, Dave. So one listener wanted to know about the infamous pool party. Did Dave Reed have anything to do with that supposed dent in the Stanley Cup?
No, I wasn't. I was there, but I left, I think, before the dent happened in the cup. There's certain parties that you get to, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to get out of here. All I can say is thank goodness we didn't have cell phones back then, because that was quite a party. But no, I was not involved with that.
Okay,
I had my own experience denting the cup with Colorado a couple years later. We dented the base. We had a little party at our house afterwards, and someone put it into a wall, and I had to knock out the base and back to. Fortunately, I had been with the cup 2 years earlier, so it's funny that we get in and we have a team meeting the next day at the rink, and I'm talking to Mike Bolt, the cup guy, and I'm like, "Hey, Mike, I dented the base, but I tapped it out. You know, I was able to tap it out with some tools." And he says, "Don't worry, buddy. He says that'll be replaced 3 times before this summer, and that's only the first of many." But
you did it yourself. So, you actually went. You basically went into your garage and fixed it yourself.
Yeah, the base is black, so it's not the same.
Okay,
but it was a metal, like a aluminum type thing, and so I just took like a piece of wood and a hammer and just slowly tapped it out, and kind of get the rounded it back out to where it was from the inside out. And I wasn't too concerned because I had a feeling that the base is something that, because you can see as you look at it, that it's replaceable. Anyhow, it's one of those things. You're like, I can only imagine how many guys have done the same thing I did. And I was a little panicky, right? I'm a little panicky going out to see Mike, really serious. Don't worry about it. That's all fine. He's like, that's nothing compared. So anything that happens to the cup, it's all in good fun. And I think it just adds to the character and the charisma and the charm of the trophy.
Wow. So you were on two special teams in Dallas, and then you went to Colorado, and both teams made those epic Stanley Cup runs. And, you know, one of the things that is mentioned a lot is knowing what it takes. Can you describe what that means from a player's perspective?
Yeah, I learned that in Dallas. It was my first one, and we had guys like Luddy and Carbo and Mike Keane, Brian Skrudlin, you know, knew he had won. Sean Chambers, guys who had won cups, and their ability to get to the rink in big situations was much more relaxed, because they were like, "Hey, we got this." And it's like, I found that out. We're going into final games, and you guys are pacing. You know, Mike had never won, Hulley hadn't won, I hadn't won. You know, guys are pacing, and Zuby was another guy who had won a cup with us in Dallas, and Eddie was the same. Eddie hadn't won, so everybody's, you're on, oh man, we got to win this game, it's so important. 2 years later, I'm like that guy going, hey, we got this. You're like, okay, I've done this, I've won one, I know, we got this, we're a good enough team. And it's the inner confidence that you have, knowing that, okay, you know what, I've done it before, I'm gonna do it again. And I think that's where that experience really comes up. It's guys can say the right thing. Mike Keane was always great at being able to break the mood, or Brian Screw, or say the right thing to make sure everybody refocuses on what we're doing now. Because so many times guys will look at, and I was like this in Dallas, I had one, you're looking at the prize at the end. You're in the final, or you're playing Colorado in a game 7, and you're so focused, oh man, if we win this game, we're going to win the cup, or oh, I got to win this game. And it's like, no, don't worry about winning the game. Let's worry about winning the first period. Let's worry about winning the first shift. And that's where the veteran guys come in and bring you back to the same thing that we talked about in game 45 or game 55. It's like, okay, guys, let's win this shift. Let's win this period. Let's get a good start. And that's where the veteran experience comes in, brings you back to today, what we're doing in the moment, rather than thinking about, wow, what ifs. And once you've won it, you've already won it. So now you can refocus the next time around on, hey, guys, we need to win right now. And I think that's where that experience is huge, because it just gets guys refocused at the right time to do their job. And that's really all it takes, is to the team that can focus the most. And that's why, a team like St. Louis won last year, but it's like, wow, they had zero experience. And that's a difficult thing to do, to have a team, and because the emotions are incredibly high. And you can't help but think about, hey, I'm going to win the Stanley Cup, going into a game, and we're up against Buffalo, we're up 3-2, and you don't sleep the night before, the day of the game, because it's all you're thinking about. So, I'm going to win the cup. And meanwhile, you get a game to play, and that's the real focus, is to be able to play that game. And that's where the experience comes in. That's what I found when I moved to Colorado my second time. I guys like Ray Bork, who I remember coming in game 7, I sat beside him in the locker room, and I'd say, hey, Bubs, everybody called him Bubs. Hey, Bubs, how's it going? Oh, he was, I said, hey, did you have a good nap this afternoon? And I was like, I'm an hour and a half. And oh, he was cursing and swearing at me, because he was, hey, this is his game 7. He'd never won. Been in the league 22 years.
Wow.
And I was so relaxed coming in. And so were guys like Joe Sakic, Pat Groff, and all the stars who'd won it. And they're relaxed. Like, hey, we got this. Don't worry about it. And here's Ray, a Hall of Famer, nervous as to be. And Rob Blake was the same. So it's just interesting, the mood and that relaxed part. But I really found the second time you're just focused on what you need to do in the moment.
So did you see a different Ray Bork from your time in Boston as compared to that guy that sat next to you in the locker room?
You know what? On a regular basis, day-to-day basis, he was the same. He was very focused. I mean, I played with Ray in Boston. He was incredibly focused. He worked harder than anybody in practice. Most superstars in the game do. When we got to Colorado, that's probably the first time I've ever seen nerves in Ray, was in game 7 before the game. And once you get the game going, and Ray's a vocal guy, he's a fun guy in the locker room. And, once you get closer to the game, he got into his game mode. But, when you're a couple hours before the game, that's the most, I've never seen Ray nervous, because he's always so poised. And, it's like all superstars, you don't see the nerves in them, because they just go about their business. And that was an interesting moment. But he was great with us in Colorado. I mean, he was, I think he was one of our top players. I think he was a first-team All-Star, first or second-team All-Star that year in the National Hockey League when he retired. So that kind of tells you how good he was.
We're talking with Dave Reed, two-time Cup winner from your Dallas Stars. One of those Cups came, and also now one of the better, what I feel, better analysts in the NHL, working for NHL Network. Don't forget to check out NHL Network's coverage. They're going to be all over this upcoming NHL playoff, which is going to be absolutely exciting. Let's transition to today's Stars. Jim Nill has said that the reason he brought in guys like Pavelski and Perry and even a guy like Ben Bishop a few years back is because of that playoff seasoning that we've been talking about. How do you look at this Stars team as far as a potential playoff run?
I like what they've got. I love the defense on the team. They're now known as a defensive juggernaut, one of the top teams in the league for goals against, tough to score against, tough to really get any offense going in the defensive zone. And that in playoffs, to me, is still one of the most important things. And, you bring in a Pavelski and Corey Perry, if they get hot, they get in situations, they can still play offense, they can still score. When you've already got Sagan and Ben there, that helps. I like this team kind of top to bottom. Goaltending is excellent. Common Bishop and Hudobin is a fantastic pair. It goes along with the defensive mindset. And this is going to be a weird year, but even coming into the playoffs before the shutdown started, I really think this team, after letting Jim Montgomery go, Rick Bonus comes in, I really think this team, if they can find a way to score a few more goals, if they can get that timely, a little more consistent scoring, I think they could be a threat along with anybody else. And the Central Division is one of the toughest divisions. It proves that with three teams of the four going into the round robin, starting in the playoff rounds coming up next week. So I like what they've got, but they've got to be able to score given the opportunity, and that's what the team has struggled at pretty much most of the season.
And you played against, you just missed Rick Bonus in Boston, but you played against him for a number of years. Was there a certain coaching style when you went up against a Bonus type team and your years now as an analyst? Have you seen his style change in any way?
Yeah, you know, I was there with Rick in Boston.
Oh, okay.
They let him go. I got back there in 91-92, and we got to the conference final. And that was, Pittsburgh was in their run with Mario Lemieux and their stacked team there. They swept up us in four in the conference final, and then they swept Chicago. But Rick was our coach, and they switched Rick out for Brian Sutter. And we had a team there that we had all sorts of – we went through over 50 players. And Rick was a very good coach as far as having, you know, saying, here's the message, what we need to do. We played in the old Boston Gardens. So it was a small rink, so it's like pretty much just get the pucks to the net. Let's get the offense going, but be conscious defensively. And the Bruins were always a pretty defensive-conscious team. That was – you know, Rick was more known as an assistant coach. So assistant coaches are the friends to the guys, the coach that can kind of break the ice with the head coach. You know, when you've got an issue, you'd go to an assistant coach, and that Rick was very approachable. He was like that as a head coach. So it's going to be interesting to see how many tweaks he's going to make from when we shut down in March to where the guys are coming back now, where he's had the opportunity to kind of revisit players and maybe some line juggling. It's difficult to change coaches midway through the season and keep up the same momentum. So I like Bones as a coach. He's a great guy, and I hope he has great success, because there's nobody in the coaching ranks who deserves it more than Rick Bonus. So I think the players know it, and the players will play for him.
Yeah, one of the things that they've done in practice down here, whether or not we see it in game, but they switched up the lines in that now you have Sagan with Hintz as the center and Gurianov, which I think provides a lot more offense and might give Tyler Seguin that opportunity to get going in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're gonna have to rely on Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn. I mean, you've got the young guys. Gurianov and Hintz are fantastic, and I think an unknown for the team could be Radulov coming in through the playoffs here. It's you have guys who are going to step up in big moments. Seguin, Benn, Radulov—they've proven they can do that. Hintz last year was phenomenal in the playoffs, so. It's the Gurianov. He's going to be interesting to see how he comes back. I mean, he's continued to improve in his short time with the Stars over the few years. He's a couple of years in the American League. So, and this year, he was a breakout year offensively with his 20 goals. So it's going to be interesting. But, you know, I don't put a lot of stock in lines as you go along, because they can change in a heartbeat. And, you know, some coaches are we're keeping our lines, we're sticking with them. But I really think, the Stars have got the luxury of playing in the preliminary round, which gives them the three games of play to determine 1 through 4. And looking at a quick look at the standings, I'm pretty sure they were fourth coming in. So even if they end up fourth, they haven't changed their status coming in. So they have those three games to kind of set up, whereas other teams have three games to set up, and they're playing in the preliminary playoffs. The first round, they could be out in three games. So Dallas has got that luxury, and it'd be interesting to see how the line juggling goes on when you play somebody else not wearing a star on their jersey in the scrimmage games.
Yeah, absolutely. At NHL Network, you guys throw up a lot of analytics on the screen. I think it's fascinating to watch, and you know, I think analytics are a huge part of the game, but it's amazing when the playoffs start how kind of the old school part of the game comes back in, and you see more physicality. And a guy like, I'll use Patrick Maroon last year, a guy that's not necessarily going to show up at the top of the analytics leaderboard, yet beats the Stars so the St. Louis Blues can move on, and has a huge goal against the Bruins to win the cup. Do you guys see that from your network analysis as well?
Yeah, it's difficult. I'm not a big analytics guy. I appreciate what it can provide, what it can do. But I think once you hit playoffs and big moments come from anybody, and Maroon, it's a perfect example by throwing Patrick Maroon out there. I mean, he's just a big body. When it gets to playoffs, it's all about one-on-one battles and competing and winning one-on-one battles. It's not about, how many times did you dump the puck out or dump the puck in, or how many times did you cross the line, you know, taking the puck over from zone to zone, zone entry, zone exit. It's all about, hey, we're in the zone. I got to win the battle in the corner. And that in playoffs is more important. And, you know, if you win the battle at the right time, like you might lose a bunch of battles somewhere, but if you win that battle at the right time and create the goal that wins you the game that is desperately needed, That's really all anybody cares about. And guys like Maroon are capable of that because of the size he's got. And he was never the fastest, but he was very difficult last year's playoffs below the goal line in front of the net. And he caused all sorts of havoc for teams because of his ability to just get in the way and bang some goals in and make some plays. And a lot of times you look at it and go, regular season, 82 games, that's, you know, we need faster players. But in the playoffs, you know what, maybe we need one or two of those guys.
Yeah.
And that's where I use the eye test in playoffs, and it's being one-on-one battles to me is more important than how many times you can count a stat, because it's just such a short series, and you might have terrible stats all year, and boom! I think the Claude Lemieux was probably the best at it. He wasn't necessarily the best player in the regular season. He didn't get a lot of goals or points, but come playoff time, he was huge. Mike Keane, another guy. You know, he got two goals in Game 7 against the Avs in 99. You know, here's another guy who might chip in 12 goals, and all of a sudden playoff time comes in, and, you know, he and Carbo were phenomenal up front. They were probably the most consistent players throughout our four rounds. So it's interesting, but I still think playoffs are just a little bit there, a lot different, and it's tough to bring in regular season analytics as to say, well, this guy should be playing, this guy shouldn't be playing. It's all... If you're playing well today, you're going to play for me tomorrow.
Yeah, like
that's kind of the way it works.
The Ryan Reeves line impact for Vegas, remember last year with the Cup, St. Louis and Boston. One of the big storylines was who's going to win the battle of the third and fourth lines.
Yeah, and that usually is the way it works when you get to that point. It's the depth of the teams and which guys on those depth lines are going to step up at the right moment. And normally just banging in a goal around the crease. It's not, you know, not the prettiest goal, but it's the goal that, because the top two lines will do their thing offensively. They're always, you say they're a wash. It's who's going to win those, you know, it's like the last pair in defense. Who's going to be better, the last pair in defense for each team? That 5-6 pairing, who's going to win on that 5-6 pairing? Because they're going to be matched up when the home ice advantage isn't there against the bad draws and the defenses on faceoffs when you can't change. Which group of the pairings is going to be stronger? And doesn't always show up in the stats, but as teams, you appreciate those guys playing in those roles, because they always say you're only as good as your weakest link. Well, if your weakest link isn't weak, then you got a good chance of winning.
Any one or two teams that you like going into this?
Well, you know, I would say coming in, I was liking the way Colorado was playing. In the West, and I was liking the way Boston was going in the East. But now I think with everybody getting healthy and everybody resetting, I don't think anybody's favored. It's just too, you know, you can look at all the stats and everything, but right now I think whoever gets off to the best start and whoever gets on a roll, and can find the scoring, can find the team play quick enough, I think that's the team that'll give the advantage to. And I mean, that could be anybody. So I'm really not favoring anybody. But going into it months ago, those are the two teams that, to me, were really impressing.
NHL vet, two-time Cup champion, one with the Stars, which we'll always be grateful for. Now one of the top analysts on NHL Network. Check out their coverage, and you can check out all their coverage. NHL Network, NHLNetwork.com. It's about to be back. Keep up the great work. And I do end, I know you're a two-time Stanley Cup champion, but, you know, looking at some of these factoids about Dave Reed, in 83-84, I don't know what was in the water in Peterborough, 60 games, 97 points, 60 games, 64 assists. That's Connor McDavid-like numbers in the OHL for Dave Reed.
You always say you don't make it by blocking shots in the NHL. You make it because you've got skill somewhere. So everybody who came to the NHL had skill and were able to do it. So I was the captain of the team in Peterborough, and I started my career as an offensive player. And then through my years in Boston, I realized that my offense was very sporadic, and to be in the National Hockey League, it has to be more consistent. So that's where my hockey sense and my skating allowed me to get more in that defensive role and penalty killing role. And that's where my career was really able to take off and, you know, fall back in the 99 playoffs. When I get the opportunity to play for short spurts with the skilled players, I was able to understand the game. And I think most guys are like that. Guy Carbon, like phenomenal stats in junior hockey and the American Hockey League, and he was one of the best, obviously, as the Selke Trophy guys and defensive players in the game. So one day I was able to do it, but my career was no more as a role player and the checker penalty killer, and I'm just grateful that I was able to adapt when I did and continue my career.
You're too humble. You had a pretty darn good career, Dave. Two cups and a lengthy career, and now a very good analyst for NHL Network. Thanks for the time today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks, Gavin. Enjoy the games.
All right, thanks. And don't forget, you can watch Dave and others on NHL Tonight, 5 o'clock, plus NHL Network will feature exhibition games beginning this upcoming Tuesday at 7. Visit NHLNetwork.com for your local listings. Always great to talk to Dave about the current state of the NHL, as well as a throwback from that 99 amazing Stanley Cup team by the Dallas Stars. Let's get to the mailbag. A lot of you had some great questions this week. One of the questions thrown out there is, Gavin, what do you think of who will get the share of the load as far as Hudobin and Bishop? I think, you know, when you have this three-game set, you're probably going to be looking at Bishop for two games, Hudobin for one. And then you're looking at Bishop. I mean, depending how they play out those three games, I mean, obviously, if Bishop struggles, then you'll see more of Hudobin. But when you look at the experience of Ben Bishop and what he brings as far as a playoff goalie with a guy that needs to get you a win, you got to go up. You got to go with Ben Bishop. The other thing I want everyone to think about is how tight it gets when playoffs come. Everything's tighter. It's more of a physical game. So getting the puck out of your zone quickly is crucial. And that's where Ben Bishop almost becomes that seventh defenseman for you. He's very vocal. He's a very good puck handling goalie. And, you know, he'll tell the defensemen as they're backtracking where the forwards are coming. He'll also spread out the ice. He'll also make the forwards have to lean towards the boards to pin the puck up against the boards to try to keep it in the zone. So I think for those reasons and for the fact that he is your starting goalie, we'll see more of Bishop other than Hudobin. And then someone asked, what is the status of Hudobin next year? I think that's a real interesting question. Currently on the books for $2.5 million. I think Anton Hudobin, as he gets later in the year, it seems like he's getting better and better. I covered Anton for the Houston Aeros, and, you know, one of the question marks was consistency. You'd see one of those games where he'd struggle, and then another game, you know, he was by far the best goalie in the AHL, and you said, this guy's NHL ready. Well, he struggled at first, and watching him throughout the years, it just seems like that consistency has come around. I think he is a starting caliber goalie at this point if a team needs a starting goalie. So my thing is, if I'm Jim Neal in the Dallas Stars, if it's $3 million for 1 year, because remember, you got Jake Ettinger coming, their number one draft pick from a few years ago. I think Ettinger is about a year away, although at this time when the NHL and AHL ended, Jake Ettinger was the hottest goalie in the AHL. So I think Ettinger is going to be a real good one. I've watched a lot of tape on him. I see a lot of great characteristics, still real young. Just a few years ago, he's playing for Boston University in Hockey East. But I think he's going to be a real good goalie, and I think he's going to be ready probably about a year away. So what does that mean for Anton Hudobin? I think if it's $3 million for 1 year, yes. But if I'm Anton Hudobin, I'm kind of looking for a multi-year deal. I don't know if the Stars can afford to give that to him, especially if that camp's looking for $4 million. So it'll be interesting to watch as far as the offseason. Hopefully Hudobin's raising the cup and we don't have to worry about that. IndyCar Tim, always a big supporter of Sweaters Forever, asks, do the Stars have a legit chance at a deep playoff run? Will I make another appearance on his Drunk Sports DFW podcast? Of course I will. Anytime anyone wants to talk puck, I just absolutely love it. And especially this time of year when before we know it, the NHL is going to be back. So are the Stars going to make a deep playoff run? I would love to express my opinion, but I don't think anybody knows the answer to that. I think the Dallas Stars are like a Six Flags ride. It has been an absolute roller coaster this year. Let's look back. Started woefully and then started to play better hockey and then went on a tear and was one of the best teams in the NHL, and then struggled before the pandemic hit. Otherwise, I think Winnipeg would have surpassed them. They were that bad as far as hockey. Jamie Benn said as much. The stoppage happened at the right time for them. So I think when it comes to a Stars prediction, if they come out of the gate and they play physical and they play their game and they can halt the scoring and get some scoring, especially on the power play, yeah, they can make a deep playoff run. But the exact opposite can happen. What I'm nervous about on this, where they have to play Vegas, St. Louis, Colorado, is those aren't great matchups. So I don't want everyone to hit the panic button and say, you know, this is for seeding alone. So it's a good way to get the feel of what your Stars are going to be. But I don't like the Vegas and St. Louis matchup. Vegas and St. Louis are physical, like to pin you up against the boards. I don't think the Stars match up well against that. So another person asked, what do I think of the new Seattle Kraken logo? I absolutely love it. I think it was visionary. For those of you that don't know, it's the first ever cephalopod logo and team name. A cephalopod is an octopus or squid-like creature. So I think it fits perfect with the Pacific Northwest and the shipping industry. And I just love that name, Kraken. Kraken against the boards. Here comes the Kraken when they come out of the penalty box. I also love the coloring of Kraken because it mirrors the colors of the Mariners, the colors of the Sounders, the colors of the Seahawks. So it has that kind of Seattle blue-teal look. And then you have that tentacle coming up through the S with the red eye. That's perfect. If you haven't seen it, check out the secondary logo, and that will be worn on the shoulders at the top of the sweaters. And at first glance, those look like two anchors. But if you look closely at the anchor, the body of the anchor moving up toward the top is actually the Seattle Space Needle. So I thought that was a real nice touch as well. I think merchandise is going to fly off the shelves. Kraken is going to be it's a catchy name. It's a great name. And I'm also excited about that Stars-Seattle-Vancouver road trip. And for that matter, that Seattle-Vancouver rivalry, which we've seen in the MLS, is real, real hot between the Sounders and the Whitecaps. I think it's going to be great for the NHL. I think the NHL has absolutely hit a home run, finding another market that will buy season tickets at a moment's notice, rebuilding an arena like they're doing from the old Key Arena. And don't be surprised if the success of this might warrant the Seattle Sonics or an NBA franchise coming back to that area. That's kind of jumping ahead, but I think it's going to have the same effect that it did in Vegas. One of the things that you guys talked about online yesterday was, well, is it going to be like Vegas as far as the NHL expansion draft, where Vegas took on a lot of salary cap? Remember, they were starting at zero. So taking on a goalie like Fleury, who made $7.5 to $8 million, not a problem at all, and you're getting one of the better goalies in the NHL. So taking on these salaries was not an issue. Meanwhile, the opposite end, a lot of teams wanted to dump salaries, and they used Vegas as a salary dump so that they could have some cap relief. And that benefited the Vegas Golden Knights. Will that happen again? I don't believe it will. I think teams are smarter now. I think they're going to look at the Vegas, not just success in that first year with a Stanley Cup run, but the continued success as well as the players coming up from the minors of Vegas and saying, no, we cannot allow Seattle to do this. So how does this affect the Stars? Well, one of the things is you can only keep three defensemen. So there was talk yesterday about what players to protect. The question is, will any of the Stars waive their no movement clauses? Will a Jamie Benn in a few years want to be closer to home, where he grew up around the British Columbia, Vancouver area? Will he want to be closer to home at the tail end of his career? I'm not sure at that point. But, you know, he's got a long-term contract with the Stars, as does Tyler Seguin. So if they're not willing to move their no-movement class causes, that still ties up a lot of salary. One defenseman that you need to look at is John Klingberg. And the reasoning is this. Right now, he's on a very fair contract at about $4.5 million a year. When the expansion draft happens, he will only have 1 year of eligibility left. How much is John Klingberg going to receive on that open market? Is it going to be $8 or $9 million a year? Offensive defensemen are a premium in this league, probably more than ever right now. So what is a John Klingberg going to get if he were to go on the open market? And does Jim Nill have the cap relief to sign John Klingberg to a long-term contract? The other factor with the Stars is you have Miro Heiskanen, and with a couple of more years, has his offensive development increased where he's your top line blue liner on the power play? And basically, he's evolving into a top line blue liner where his offensive skill set has improved as well as his defensive skill set. And then you have Thomas Harley, who a lot of people in the Stars organization are very high on. So if you have those two players, are you going to commit to a long-term contract with John Klingberg? And if you're Seattle, that's a very, very tasty player to take in as far as a defenseman in the expansion draft in John Klingberg. So I think that's a real, real interesting question that we're looking forward to in a couple of years, still a couple of years away as far as the Dallas Stars and the expansion draft. Fuzzy Wuzzy Boom Boom's always a big supporter of the Stars Sweaters Forever podcast. He asks, who threw the cup at Vinny's house that resulted in being dented? We just heard from Dave Reed. He had left the party at that point. But if you didn't get to hear the Dave Reed dent and fixing it himself story, that to me is a great story. I just can't picture myself denting such a prized possession, arguably one of the greatest trophies in the world, and you're sitting there with a piece of wood trying to get the dent out. It's really, really fascinating. So thank you so much for your questions. They're wonderful. They're awesome. And thank you so much for supporting the Sweaters Forever podcast. So how do we grow this thing? We're going to continue doing interviews. We're going to continue doing this through the Stars, hopefully long playoff run. I think the first thing is tell a friend, forward the link that I will send out, and tell everyone that we have a local Stars NHL podcast, and you'll want to support this. The second thing is support people like Choctaw. A simple email to Choctaw, say, hey, listen to this podcast. Thank you so much for supporting hockey and DFW. That would be great. And thanks again to the people at Choctaw Casino and Resort. Your favorite slots. Remember, I like playing the slots. I'm a slot guy. I had some good success up at Choctaw playing the slots. They have table games. The food up there is terrific. Just visit their world-class casino. Tell them the Sweaters Forever podcast sent you. Thanks so much for Choctaw for supporting us. And we'll be back next week as we prepare for the NHL to begin. Thanks so much for listening to the Sweaters Forever podcast right here on 105.3 The Fan.